What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Happy Skews Day to you. It's April 14th as you're watching this. We're recording this on Monday, April 13th at about 1 p.m. on the left coast, roughly. I'm Trey, and that's Mark. How you doing, Mark?
Good, man. We're going to talk about the Hungarian election today because there's a lot going on that connects back to the United States. And before that, we'll talk about Iran for a little bit. But I wanted to mention, we talked about religion last week and the weird like religious schisms happening within MAGA in the United States between like Protestants and Catholic Church. And I don't want to like not only talk about religion on this show because not a one of us are experts or even enthusiasts. But I don't want to not mention that the Department of Defense threatened to kidnap the Pope.
I knew there was a Trump Pope standoff happening and that Trump styled himself as Jesus and all that. I saw all that, but I didn't know that the DOD chimed in and had his back.
They called like the whatever, I forget the Italian word for it, but whoever the Vatican's ambassador to the United States is and to the Department of Defense apparently back in January. And if the Pope didn't fall in line, they vaguely referenced the Avignon papacy, which is when the King of France basically tortured the Pope to death and replaced him.
So, well, that's alarming.
Yeah, so yeah, Kidnap the Pope is basically, if you wrote a Dan Brown novel written by an AI trained on Nicolas Cage movies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's fun.
The AI Jesus picture, Trump already, he took that down, right? And he normally, and he's lying about it too, saying, I thought that's me as a doctor. It's not Jesus. Like, because doctors wear Jesus robes and have like halos of light behind them with like oddly demonic, I guess, angel figures in the sky circling overhead and all this stuff. Classic doctor shit. But my point or my question is like, that seems out of character for him and to walk anything back, really, at least that quickly, or like even like subconsciously acknowledge that he ought not done that. And, you know, does that mean something? Like, is this big misstep?
He's the amount of pushback he got from even open pushback, like even like Riley Gaines and some other like MAGA pastors and stuff were shitting on him for it. Like, so it is like a little bit different. It's just evidence that the fact that he felt the need to do it is this, like, he's obviously, you know, the people that keep seeing him as politically, invulnerable or like weird to me. But so, the photo, like, Donald Trump is like, if his defense is like, well, I half-assed it, I'm like, obviously.
Right.
I'm not smart. I didn't pay that close of attention. Like, I understand and agree with you. I don't necessarily think you're lying, but the picture, like, he was touching a guy on the forehead and bringing him back to life with the power of, like, light was emanating from his hand.
Yeah. One thing that I thought was funny about that, and I guess this could be covered by just, it's AI, so it's some prompt
the guy he brought back to life looked like Jeffrey Epstein? Was that it?
Or no, else? I mean, that too was also funny. But that, somebody typed a prompt into an AI thing to generate that image. And you might get this just from being like, this is for Donald Trump. We need Donald Trump as a messianic figure in the like prototypical MAGA landscape. And it might do this on its own. But I wonder if the person who typed it in put all that and then at the bottom put like ... Also, no blacks, please. Because there was, of all the people in the background and foreground, everything, it was just all whites. That's all they had on there. So I just wonder if Stephen Chung specified that when he typed it into ChatGPT or whatever.
I don't, like, it's trained off, you know, the data set probably includes a bunch of white Jesus figures, so I don't know if you even have to ask for it.
I know, that's why I said, yeah. I figure it might automatically do that, which is, you know, a real feature, not a bug, but it's funny to think about.
Yeah. Like the racism in our futuristic utopia is weird. I saw a story the other day about like how like people apply racism to robots. Like if you line up of robots of different colors and ask the person, the robots are identical except for what color they're painted. But you ask them what robot they want to do what task, they'll basically choose by skin color. So like this is a bad example, but like for like outdoor labor, you pick the one is brown. Mm-hmm. For like math tutor, they'd pick the yellow one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like all the old problems still remain, even with our new ones too. So yeah, like he said, he thought it was a doctor to Red Cross type situation. This doctor was the emergency room was clouds. Like it's not, this is so fucking stupid. Like it's right. Like this is like if you guys are religious, like one, Trump's generated AI images of himself as a king and himself as the Pope, the new Pope. Remember last year when that new Pope was being appointed?
Oh yeah, yep.
So Being Jesus himself is like just the next step in the evolutionary chart. He fantasizes about, he sees himself as a messianic figure. They treat him like one. So why you probably didn't expect to get any sort of backlash. So honestly, you probably must be wondering what the fuck is going on. But before we get to the show, I want to talk about a fun story here. The chimp war. You been following the chimp war, Trey?
I'm aware of it. I have not been following it. I know that I've just generally heard before, maybe it's back when I used to watch Joe Rogan or something years ago, but that chimps sometimes have war. It's just a thing that I know happens. I didn't know that there was a new, spicy new chimp war happening. I mean, I did know that, but I don't know the details, so I'm looking forward to learning it.
My understanding is chimpanzees are the only other species who have organized murderous conflicts, long going. This chimp war, for example, has been going on for like 8 years. But the news is about is scientists think they figured out why via social mapping and researching how their social dynamics work. The backstory here is for 20 years, the Ngogo chimps of Uganda's Kibali National Park, I'm not sure if I'm saying any of that correctly except for Uganda, were living the good life by being together. They helped one another, dominated and killed apes from neighboring groups, expanded their territory, and boosted their babies' chances of survival. Because ape together strong, right? Mm-hmm. But in 2015, tell me how much this starts to sound familiar to you, based upon your experiences as an American human being. But in 2015, the group started splitting into two clusters. Around the same time, a new alpha male rose to dominance, and then everything fell apart. So for background here, Kibali National Park, they have, like, the only other thing that happens in here besides like chimp is like the economy is based upon, except for outside of tourism, is based upon wild coffee. A bunch of wild coffee grows there. So maybe this war is about controlling the flow of wild coffee like it's oil or heroin. I don't know. But the important thing to know is Kibali National Park did receive U.S. aid funding, so we are somehow funding both sides of this ape war, Trey. There's been other recorded chimp wars before. When we describe the way the chimp war works and why they describe it as war is like they have firm territories.
Right, and they'll raid the other territory. They'll have like raiding parties and go into the other territories and stuff. They go on like Chimp Team 6 missions and shit like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It'd be like a squad of like 6 or 8 chimps who invade the enemy territory, try to catch one of the enemy males alone or enemy females with an infant. Usually they prefer a female with an infant and they kill the infant.
Right.
But they catch a male alone, they'll also beat the shit out of him and attempt to kill him. So Jane Goodall witnessed the last great chimp war. It's where she got her origin starting. Hers was in a different part of Africa. I forget, but I watched this interview with her if you got this, Matt.
We used to think it was only humans who waged war, but we find that chimpanzees, like humans, have this rather unpleasant ability to create an in-group and an out-group.
Yeah, you sort of broke our hearts, you know? You had us, you raised our spirits.
Yeah.
Animals and chimpanzee life.
Again, we share 98% of our DNA with chimpanzees. So 8 years ago, the two groups split, and this new study has kind of figured out their best guess as to why. Basically, a couple of older chimpanzees who provided like social leadership died. Social bonds frayed. Then there was a disease outbreak that killed a few more like dominant males, allowed a new generation to rise up who were apparently more assertive and radical. So then they split into two groups and started killing each other for reasons that are basically inexplicable to the uninitiated. And the smaller group is winning because they're more radical and hateful.
Yeah, does any of this sound uncomfortable? I gotta be honest with you. I was joking this morning about this being a simulation because of Amazon package reasons we won't get into. But this is also seeming to back this up. It's like that's like the pilot or beta testing area for the bullshit that, you know, the programs that run in the humanity part is in this little chimp preserve in Uganda. Because, yeah, that's all eerily familiar.
Dude, you could, like, any human conflict, you can drape ideologies over stuff. When you trace the beginning of any conflict down, it's like, oh, well, you know, Germany wanted the Sudetenland, so 20 million people died. Like, what's important about the Sudetenland? And, like, fucking nothing. They just used to have it.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's continue. Producer Matt's with us as always. Like I said, Mark said we're going to be talking about the outcome of an election in Hungary and the effect that our old friend James David Vance had there on a little bit later. But first, the Daily Dumbass. Matt, graphic, please. Today's DD, the potential of nuclear winter. for messing with my Roth IRA.
So, Mike, let's talk about tonight, this deadline that President Trump has set, 8 p.m., has threatened to destroy a civilization. How does an investor process that? Is it a bigger upside risk or downside risk?
All right. sometimes this mirror being held up to our society just makes me extremely uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like her question, like, this lady is not, like, our country is like this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, like, conversations like that are happening in boardrooms and stuff around this country all the time. Like, that's, you know, part of the problem with turning everything into just, like, numbers on a spreadsheet and stuff like that is that you could talk about any manner of inhumane, wild things without feeling ashamed, I guess, mm-hmm. or whatever, because it's just, you know, it's just trends. It's just analytics. It's just, you know, dollar signs or whatever.
And they have to navigate a world with Donald Trump in it just like the Iranians do. And the fact he's so unpredictable, nobody knows how to handle him, is part of the problem. And we'll talk about the taco, the Trump always chickens out shit in a few minutes. But like, so after the threat of nuclear winter came a ceasefire, the negotiations of Pakistan over the weekend between Iran and the United States. So it's the first face-to-face negotiations between Iran and the United States in, like, I forget however many decades. But, like, for context here, Pakistan is desperate for a deal here. They get 85% of their fuel from the 85% of their fuel passes through Strait of Hormuz. They also have a huge fertilizer shortage. This comes after a bunch of climate disasters have screwed farmers. So it's a cascading series of fuckeries that are screwing everyone, and we're just going to keep doing it. We're somehow still remain the least impacted by this, but, like, Asia's already in the middle of a huge fuel crisis. So, but Donald Trump, his brain doesn't connect two things to the other, but, like, in 5 years, we look around and we have no allies and China has all of them.
Right.
This is it. Also, like, one reason you don't like racists is because they think it'll be so easy to win a war in the Middle East based on nothing more than what they believe is their superior fucking DNA. We've forgotten that war propaganda is supposed to be for the plebs and the rabble, but, like, the professional war makers aren't supposed to think of their enemies as evil. They're supposed to respect them as worthy adversaries and treat them as people with a theory of mind and agency.
I don't understand how anyone... It wasn't even... What was it? 2-3 years ago that, like, you know, we disastrously... Well, I guess it was more than that. Fuck, time is fucked up. But I'm just saying... Iraq and Afghanistan and the quagmires that they constituted and the disastrous ends that they came to and us fucking up over the Kurds and all that and where that all ended up going, that ain't been that long ago. Like, I don't know how anyone convinces themselves that this would be like a walk in the park. You know what I mean? Like, we all just lived through that not happening. It was supposed to be, well, I remember the mission accomplished banner and all that. It was supposed to have been easy 20 something years ago, and then we were there for 20 something years and it was an abject disaster, and everyone on both sides seems to be pissed off about it by the time it was over. So I don't know how you convince, you know, yourself that this one will be we learned from all that, we're not gonna do that again, we'll nail it this time, when Iran is a much more formidable adversary, you know, aren't they, like, a much larger population and everything, a lot of other factors in their favor.
If we were invading Afghanistan, I think here's my way of addressing your question. If we were invading Afghanistan back in 2002 under President Trump, we would not have sent anyone who spoke the language. And that would have been better.
Yeah.
Right. In these negotiations, Iran sent a team of 30, including university professors, scientists, diplomats, and PhDs. And we sent, as far as I can tell, no diplomats, but a relative of Trump, a real estate developer, and J.D. Vance, who, this is not like, I don't really care about, like, quote-unquote experience levels when it comes to, like, presidents and vice presidents. I feel like it's an overall sort of thing. But, like, J.D. Vance is literally one of the least experienced people to ever be vice president. He has no high-level experience negotiating anything, much less about nuclear fucking weapons to experts.
And yeah. Jared Kushner on that team, too? Yes. Right.
Jared,
you said
Kushner,
real estate developers. Is Mr. Wonderful over there and Dr. Phil? Are they part of the, delegation? Sylvester Stallone. Witkoff, yeah.
So, yeah, let me play this video clip of J.D. Vance, Matt, if you got it, after the negotiations failed.
We have been at it now for 21 hours, and we've had a number of substantive discussions with the Iranians. That's the good news. The bad news is that we have not reached an agreement.
All right. I think that's bad news. So we've been at it for 21 hours. the JCPOA deal that the Obama administration finished negotiating after you know, two successive presidential administrations going back to George W. Bush took 12 fucking years.
Mm-hmm.
J.D. Vance could have put in a solid afternoon, but took a half, took a nap in the middle, and then called it quits, so right. we could get back to the war.
Yeah. Well, he had a busy week, right? I mean, because he's did he go to Pakistan after Hungary?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So while J.D. Vance was doing all this, the exact same moment the negotiations were falling apart, President Trump and Secretary of State Rubio were at a sports arena in Miami for UFC 37, watching a video montage of past fights. All right? Trump walked in holding hands with Dana White for some reason that no one's ever explained. Play this video of Marco Rubio.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio with us here tonight at UFC 3.
What? Marco Rubio is the goddamn Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor, and while we're negotiating about nuclear weapons, he's at a fucking UFC fight drunk off his fucking ass.
Yeah. Right. It's insane. Do you know what are those? Do you know what his hand? What's he doing with his hands? What is that?
I don't know. He's UFC 37, but he's holding up eight fingers. But is it 305? Is that like a Miami thing? He's from Miami.
Yeah, Miami thing.
Is
maybe,
that an area code? 305? Right. I mean, like, I know I'm curious.
Yeah. I know. Well, if he had the one hand turned around the other way, he would have got us both with the little finger symbol there.
Yeah, 305 is the Miami Dade. We guessed right. 305 is the Miami Dade.
Well, no, you guessed right. Good job. That didn't take you long at all. But it's fucking.
We talked about
insane.
When he shot up Public Enemy lyrics. When he shot up Public Enemy lyrics, I was like, he's the kind of guy who would throw up an area code symbol. It's just like, this is where my brain went. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, I mean, I was just saying, it's like. It's why in this type of situation, like wartime, but like early wartime, and there's negotiations at hand, and it's like global crises unfolding and stuff. Like, just the shamelessness of attending a UFC fight and, you know, having a good time in front of everyone is insane to me. You're the Secretary of State, dude. Like, it's crazy. You know, Cash Patel got shit all over, rightfully so, for doing, you know, the same thing. Not that he's going to stop either. I mean, none of them give a fuck, I guess, but it's just wild.
Yeah, so the status of negotiations basically in the last week have gone from, I don't care if they reopen the strait, to, we'll destroy your civilization if you don't mm-hmm. reopen the strait, to, well, if they mm-hmm. don't reopen the strait, then we're going to blockade it ourselves.
Yeah.
We're blockading the Strait of Hormuz now.
Yeah, I'm glad this came up. I mean, I knew it would. Okay, tell me if I'm being dumb, because I haven't this is just like what my brain thought initially. We're blockading the, like, Iran's boats, right? Or, like, the boats that are, like bound for Iran or whatever. So it's like, oh, they fucked with our oil. Well, we're going to fuck with ours, like, from the other side, not let them through. But we'll let, like, and I'm doing, like, air quotes, like, our good boats through our blockade, right? But they still would be under the same threat that they've been under mm-hmm. from Iran. Nothing really changes for them. This would be just us keeping boats that are, you know, for Iran out of their hands, but some of those boats would be like from China, right? So China has it, you know, a Chinese tanker is bound for Iran and they get to our blockade and we're like, well, you can't come through. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we're gonna come through. And like, then what happens? Like, that,
well, like, they basically
seems bad.
So they, like, they're threatening to board and seize these ships and take the crew prisoner. So we're talking about seizing a Chinese flagged tanker to try to cut off the flow of cash to Iran, right? But it'd make the global oil crisis worse because these are global markets. Like
right.
Basically, it's like, well, you make our gas go to $5. Well, we'll make our gas go to $6.50.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I can tell, the logic goes, like, Iran closed off the strait and won the war. Ergo, if we close off the strait, we also win the war. It's like he just another thing he got from Fox News, because Fox News was suggesting this all weekend. He just took it and claimed it as his own. And he's just Jesse Waters, man. Jesse Waters is the real national security advisor. So I want to talk about the taco thing for a minute. So this morning, before the markets opened, there was a story on the Wall Street Journal's website quoting Barak Ravid, who's I forget what his role is in the Israeli government, but some type of foreign minister type dude. But he was quoting an anonymous U.S. official about how negotiations are ongoing and close to calm the markets. at the same time the U.S. Navy was threatening to board and seize Chinese tankers. So they're just trying to calm the markets for one more day before Trump seizes a tanker, to increase the odds that Trump seizes the tanker so he doesn't like back down because of the fucking markets. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I want to play this really funny clip of the Japanese news trying to explain taco to their audience.
Trump always chickens out. All
right. Always chickens out. All right, you got it.
Okay.
So the fact that people need to explain how dumb our president is to their audiences is like, it will always astound me. So to go back to the CNBC clip we started the segment with, the guy answers her ghoulishly phrased question. Because, like I said, it is pertinent, just not for the reason she's asking it. And he basically says the market is trying to remain balanced because they don't actually believe Donald Trump.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. You were talking about, like, people keep saying all the time about, like, how the markets are going to respond to this. They wait until the markets close to do so much shit or whatever, and it all comes back to, like, keeping the markets in balance. And it just feels like it just keeps, like, not happening. Like, crazy shit keeps occurring, but the markets keep, you know, fucking knock on wood, not wholly bottoming out in the way that, like, I've always been led to believe that they just automatically did in moments like this. And it's like, again, I know it's all just made up and shit, but that's the explanation for that, is that because he's so full of shit and is so unpredictable, but also ultimately ineffectual, that they're just like, everybody's just kind of holding and like,
yeah,
I don't get it. Like,
So, like, let's say, like, a year ago, all right, the frog in the boiling water type situation. So, to say a year ago, Trump threatened to nuke Iran, and the markets tanked. And then he said, no, I'm not nuking Iran, and then the markets rebounded. And he does that three or four more times. Eventually, the fifth or sixth time, he threatens to do something crazy, the markets just don't react, because they assume he's
going to... Boy, who cried wolf situation.
But they're increasing the chance that he does do something crazy and destructive, because they're not reacting.
Right.
Because he only pays attention to the markets.
Because that's all he cares about.
Right.
So if it seems like they're insulated from the shit that he's doing, he won't factor in a possible market crash into his decision making anymore.
Right. They're underreacting to such a degree that, like, there's
no repercussions.
It remains true that the last tankers to go through the Strait of Hormuz before the war started still have not reached Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They're still on their way. So, like, whenever the strait does open up, that's how much time that's been, 6 weeks before tankers get places. So, like, they're still acting like there's not a shortage coming. It's very crazy. So, like, everything Trump is doing is not baked into their fucking actions. We needed some patriotic commodities traders to tank the oil futures market, right? Mm-hmm. To save the world from catastrophe. But they're just not doing it because they need to be on the right side of the bet. Because they don't want to sell off before the market rebounds. Right?
Right. So, is this one of those things where, like, I mean, he would still theoretically be the president or whatever, but it would be stretched out longer, the long-term effects of it, and it's like, hypothetically, if there was some sort of, like, blue wave or something at the midterms, and then shit goes bad, like, and then, you know, everybody starts blaming them again, like with COVID and everything, and then how... people didn't realize how long-term the effects of that would be on the economy and inflation and shit like that. And that led to, you know, Joe Biden stickers all over everything, all over the place. Mm-hmm. Like, this could also unfold that way.
But I predict in the future who's going to be blamed for what. It feels like a fucking Bugs game at this point. I have no idea. Because we're going to be talking about the Zelensky, Vladimir Zelensky a little bit, and Ukraine in the next segment related to Hungary, I wanted to mention, while we're on the subject of the Middle East war, that in Syria, Jelani gave Zelensky the full royal treatment in Damascus last week. If you want to play this video, we'll be talking about this, man. Literal red carpet, fucking band. Like, size of a Jewish comedian who's like 5'4" and depicted himself on live TV playing a piano with his dick is teaming up with a former Syrian Al-Qaeda commander to take on Iran. World War III is fucking silly, bro.
That's crazy, but why? Like, what? Why is this happening? These two specifically.
Well, Syria borders Iran, and, you know, you get your usual Shiite versus Sunni type stuff. But also, like, Ukraine has a bunch of experience fighting Iranian Shahad drones that Russia's been using on them for a long time. So that's right. The basis of this alliance. So yeah, I just wanted to say that I mentioned that to point out that a Jewish comedian who depicted himself in live TV playing a piano with his wiener is playing a far larger role in global affairs and the course of human history than I would have anticipated just a few years ago. And just yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, you know, I mean, look what. I mean, obviously, look who our president is. I don't know. I don't know if he'd ever played a piano with his wiener, but he got Stone Cold Stunnered, and you know.
Ukraine, they're just like us, I guess. Yeah,
yeah.
Nothing. He's a person of substance. Like he's like his right. Like comedians who play the piano with their dick have a right to say in the country's future as much as anyone else. It's just like mm-hmm. just the sentence is fun to say. But it's a crazy the crazy future we live in. As a sad note, I want to mention that just this morning, Zelensky announced that for the first time in the history of this war, in the Russia-Ukraine war, and I assume the first time in human history, an enemy position was taken by Ukraine using only unmanned platforms, ground robotic complexes and drones, and Russian soldiers surrendered to the robots. You got this image of the robot, Matt. Yeah, that's the T-100's Papaw right there. We're looking at. Before we get to the next segment, the next Daily Dumbass, we should probably take a quick break.
Yep, we'll be back right after this. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, I grew up in a place where money stress was not some abstract concept. In fact, it was a fact of life, an everyday fact of life. In fact, it was like, you know, economically destitute, my hometown. I don't know if you guys know that about me. I don't know how long you've been around. If you've listened to me for, I don't know, more than a week, you've heard me talk about that. But it is true. We were very accustomed to worrying about money all the time. So, you know, I was steeped in it, you know, molded by it. But it's not unique to towns like my hometown, okay? Many, many, many Americans go through it all the time, right? And, you know, most people don't have a financial advisor. There's people that don't even have bank accounts, you know. You just do whatever you can. Handle it, keep living, but it stresses you out more than just about anything else in the world. 88% of Americans have said they feel some kind of financial stress at the start of this year, and that's not a personal failure. That's something everybody goes through. And whenever money gets tight, it doesn't just mess with your bank account. It messes with your sleep, your mood, your relationships. Money's one of the top reasons couples fight. We all know that. It brings about real anxiety, real depression, real problems. And a lot of people carry that weight around with them, and they, you know, just keep it to themselves. Bottle it all up, you know, but that's what therapy is for, okay? Not financial advice. That's a different thing. You can do that, too, if you have the means. But therapy helps you unpack all this shame and anxiety and stress that you feel because of money trouble. Help you figure out why you think about money the way that you do. Can build healthier ways to cope with it. Just make you feel less alone in dealing with it in the first place. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with therapy. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. They match you based on your goals and needs. And with over 30,000 therapists and more than 6 million people served, they've got the experience to get it right. They have an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars across 1.7 million client reviews. And if the first match doesn't click for you, you can switch anytime you want to. So numbers don't lie, all right? And whether it's money stress or any other kind of stress in the world, therapy can help, I promise you. So sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/skews. That's better, H-E-L-P.com, betterhelp.com/SKEWS. betterhelp.com/skews. Sign up today and get 10% off. BetterHelp, help yourself. Weekly Skews is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol. April, don't play around. Tell you what, Masters just wrapped up. Roy with the repeat. That was exciting. Baseball season is getting going. Hot dogs and beers at the ballpark and all that. Music festivals are starting to kick off. Full sprint of outdoor stuff you can do because the weather's getting nicer. And, you know, I'm here for it. I like it. But I'm not 25 anymore. In fact, I just turned 40. Nowadays, after a big night out, including, you know, some drinky drinks, I just don't bounce back the next day the way I used to. Not at all. Start to feel like you have to make a choice. I can have a fun night or I can be a human being the next day, right? And it's got to be one or the other. Never the twain shall meet. That is, until I found pre-alcohol. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic, invented by PhD scientists to help tackle those rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut, and it's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration in and of itself. That's to blame for those rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Then drink responsibly, of course, always, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Every time I use Z-Biotics before a night with friends, I wake up feeling like a regular person the next day, which is really saying something for me. I can make plans the next morning. I can get up. I can do stuff, get in the gym earlier than usual. You know, I don't have to dread the entire rest of the day, and that's not nothing. Don't let a rough next day keep you on the sidelines this spring. Go to zbiotics.com/skew, that's S-K-E-W, to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use the promo code SKEW at checkout. Zbiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they will refund your money, no questions asked. One more time, that's zbiotics.com/S-K-E-W with the promo code SKEW at checkout for 15% off. All right, we're back, everybody. We've got an honorable mention for Daily Dumbass for you. Hungarians who did not fall under the mesmerizing spell of James David Vance's once-in-a-lifetime charisma.
That's obviously a tough act to follow, but I'm going to do my best because we have got to get Viktor Orban reelected as Prime Minister of Hungary, don't we?
All right. So, the tough act to follow who's mentioning is he opened his speech by calling Trump on the phone for like a minute and a half of dead air, in the middle of which Trump did not pick up the first time. So I wanted to show you this. This is the pie market odds of Orban's reelection before and after JD's arrival. Look at those fucking odds.
Surely not. I mean, I know that everybody's been like, you know, JD goes over there and the fucking, you know, guy gets his ass whipped immediately. Imagine that. But, you know, I didn't realize it could be illustrated so starkly by Vegas betting odds or whatever.
I got a few more data points for you, Trey. JD converts to Catholicism and then is publicly rebuked by two consecutive popes, one of which died immediately after meeting him.
Right. I remember that.
He breaks Ohio State's national championship trophy when they visit the White House, Ohio State being his home state. He went to the Iran negotiations, somehow resulted in a blockade of a blockade. And he endorses Orban and immediately ends a 16-year rule. He's got the touch of the Midas touch, baby.
They call that the Mirdes touch, I think. Mird, or I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, but it's like French for poop, right? He's got everything he touches turns to shit. You get it.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point out that here in the United States, Vance's net approval has tumbled by more than 20 points since early last year. He's the least popular vice president at this point in polling history in the United States. And I want to compare JD's vibes to this video of a guy named Zsolt Hegedűs, who probably be the next health minister in this upcoming administration, celebrating Orban's loss.
All right.
Yeah, he got moves. I didn't know.
I wasn't expecting that. He really took it up a notch right there at the very end. At first, I was like, yeah, no, he's having a good time. It's not that crazy. And then he really busted him out.
That's what we can't really do the editing like that, but I just basically want to show you was him doing the little. I was like, like for the first 10 seconds,
get him Zsolt.
Yeah, this is like an uncle at a wedding. And then he's like, wait a minute, this uncle used to be a fucking B-boy or some shit.
Right.
So the reason, the Hungarian election results are kind of like a global shockwave, because the whole international new populist MAGA right was using Hungary as like their organizing operating base. I saw somebody call it Chud Wakanda, and I just wanted to just do that.
That tickled me. I had not heard that before.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Is this like this might be a stupid comparison, but is this sort of like potentially like when Brexit happened, you know, a few months before Trump got elected here or whatever? Like, that was kind of a wild result, and there were people, that me included at the time, it was like, I hope this isn't like a alarming bellwether for or a harbinger of a particular type of doom or anything. And then it
it's like happened. Interesting harbinger. I hope it's not of doom. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like basically for the last basically 16 years, the entire time Orban's been in power, the American right, including Fox News and Trump himself, like they've spent years like idolizing this random post-Soviet kleptocracy with the GDP of less than half the size of Minnesota. It's all very fucking weird, but like Orban did do a good job of establishing what he called illiberal democracy. Basically, a type of like democracy. Orban got voted out because of the landslide, but it was heavy gerrymander. It's not even clear what the new government's going to be able to do because he stacked the judiciary and rewrote the Constitution, right?
So, on that note, I I'm an American. I don't have a fucking clue what other countries are doing for the most part. So I guess ignorantly, perhaps, I totally just assumed that Viktor Orban's Hungary was the type of place where, yeah, they have elections, but they have elections the way that like Vladimir Putin has elections or something. But you just said that he'd reshaped everything about their system and all that in advance of this, but he still lost anyway, just because it was just that much of a landslide or something. Like, he tried to stack the deck in his favor, but even that wasn't enough because that's how much he didn't hit for them ultimately.
It was incredibly stacked, and I would say the people are saying, like, well, this proves you can easily be an authoritarian. It's like, no, not easily. 16 years of authority, 16 years of fucking effort organizing, and then on top of that, like historical levels of ridiculous corruption on behalf of Russia, which is a country the Soviet Union they broke off from, and they're now being asked, basically marshaled in service of a war against Ukraine they have no interest in. And like on top of that, there was a extremely weird sex abuse scandal we'll get to in a little bit because it takes a little bit to explain. But like it took a bunch of stuff to dislodge Orban. And I don't know if people like thinking, well, this just means it'll be easy to do here. It's like, but like Orban, I guess, could have tried to mobilize with force to hold on to power. He conceded to, you know, to his credit, to such a deal that matters. But like Hungary is surrounded by NATO countries. Like it would have been like he lost like by like 17 points or something. His party did. You saw there's thousands of people in the street that were singing "We Are the Champions" by Queen. Is he going to shoot all those people? If you try to maintain power by force and you lose, the stakes are apocalyptic for you. You're going to be living in exile and disgrace if you lose. At a minimum, if not being dragged to the street, if not being imprisoned and executed,
yeah, hung up by your toes,
right. So, like, you got to be, like, plus he's already succeeded. He was a prime minister for a long fucking time. He's rejiggered the system in benefit of his political movement. There's, like, he has been a successful model. And that's, like, let me quote here from this New York Times piece about how much conservatives love, American conservatives, populist conservatives love Hungary. In 2022, Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, said, quote, "Modern Hungary is not just a model for conservative statecraft, but the model. Under Fidesz, which is Orban's party, Budapest has become a sort of Disneyland for reactionaries disenchanted with their own governments. American and British conservatives are constantly passing through the city on government-funded fellowships." Orban made a guy named Gladden Papin, who is a MAGA influencer who's very close to J.D. Vance, who doesn't even speak Hungarian. He made him head of the Hungarian Institute of International Affairs, which is like a wing of their version of the State Department. Right. So condolences to Gladden Papin on having to get a real fucking job. Get a real name, real fucking name while you're at it.
Yeah. Go back to the candy store. All right. But Nazis should not have that whimsical of a name, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Gladden Papin.
Orban's like economic mismanagement also can't be understated here. It's not the Russian war did the war between Russia and Ukraine didn't exactly help him, but like they had high unemployment, no growth, threadbare social services, and like basically his entire campaign revolved around the like crazy claim that his center right opponent Peter Magyar was going to drag Hungary to war in Ukraine, to the degree that like Hungary's capital was blanketed with posters of side by side mugshot style photos of Magyar and Vladimir Zelensky with the words "They are dangerous, stop them." Throw up the picture of these posters, Matt. So. Yeah, after JD's visit, the election was a wipeout, like I said. Magyar's party, called Tiza, got a legislative supermajority. Fidesz got wiped out after a turnout of upwards of 78%, which is the highest turnout in national elections since the end of communism. In the middle of the election, it's pretty funny. Orban literally posted on Twitter, "Too many people are voting."
Stop the count.
Yeah. So basically, J.D. Vance is less popular in Hungary than beating back the KGB was in 1992, if you judge by turnout. The main takeaway of this thing is anti-corruption is a pretty powerful message. Who the fuck knew? Magyar's platform is basing anti-corruption and fuck Russia, i.e. fuck foreign influence corrupting our government. those are the main themes if anybody here wants to learn any lessons from it. And talking about corruption, this morning, airtime, Magyar had a press conference and he announced that the outgoing foreign minister had barricaded himself in his office to shred documents connected to Russia. Yeah. So it's worth pretty striking that we did mention that Russia and the White House both wanted the same guy reelected precisely because he was corrupt and in both of their pockets.
Yeah.
The main immediate impact of Magyar's election related to the rest of Europe is he's promised to repair relations with the European Union and unblock a $90 billion EU loan that's headed to Ukraine. So you can tell why Russia was meddling in this. There goes $90 billion straight to the front lines to blow up their guys. But I do want to take a moment here to enjoy the list of people upset by this and been told to fuck off by the Hungarian people besides Viktor Orban and J.D. Vance and Vladimir Putin. We're talking about Donald Trump, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, and Bibi Netanyahu. So the worst dinner party in fucking human history.
Right. Yeah, no, again, hopefully this is... this is indicative of a larger trend or whatever going forward, because it's like you've been wanting and hoping for a long time that all these people, they successfully get the right-wing populace to get people on board with these messages about the other, the enemy. That's what othering out groups and stuff and making people afraid and culture war shit and all that stuff. And we've been over here yelling the whole time. It's like, right, but they suck at all the rest of it, too. Like, they make everyone's lives worse, right? They fuck things up for people. And it's like, eventually, when does your life get bad enough or you get pissed off enough that you stop being as worried about Mexicans or, for them, Ukrainians or whatever the fuck, the gay people everywhere, I assume. But, and, realize, fuck y'all for the way my life is, or the way our country is, Like, and it's been a long time with right-wing populism at this point, and it hasn't been happening, but lately it started to feel like it potentially might be, that there's cracks showing or whatever now, and so this result in Hungary, is...
Yeah.
Perhaps a hopeful one in that regard. They just push people too far eventually. And when you push too many people too far, it still doesn't matter how rich and otherwise powerful that you are. Like those dudes you just named, like they wield immense amounts of wealth and influence. But if you piss enough people off enough, then...
Right.
And they can still take you down.
Before we get too far into this, I do need to notice Magyar is not some lib or lefty. He was a member of Orban's party until about a year and a half ago. Basically, it's just the economy's gotten so bad, Orban got so corrupt that he left to start his own thing. Like, let me quote here, talking about his general politics. During campaign stopover in Bisk, Magyar claimed that Filipino workers at a Samsung battery factory have been eating ducks and goldfish they captured from the Budapest Zoo.
Okay,
it's the same everywhere, but he's less.
Yeah,
is this
that
crazy?
Feels less incendiary? That hell, people eat ducks and fish. Do you know what I mean? Like JD said, Haitians were eating dogs and cats.
That's fair
in America. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I eat ducks.
Yeah,
ducks hit to eat. You shouldn't take them from the zoo. Yeah. Budapest. That doesn't sound like the best zoo to me. If ducks are a headliner, ducks and goldfish? Come on, dog. You couldn't get one red panda, a couple seals or something? Fuck.
We've got to get the pandas back fucking so we can send some to Budapest. Yeah. And say their school children can visit something besides goldfish. So, but yeah, what you're talking about, like racism is like you they might think there's some high-level reason that would bond together, like Bibi Netanyahu and Donald Trump and Viktor Orban, this global right movement, and that then, like, J.D. Vance just says it. It's just fucking racism. Listen to this speech here.
They declare they're never going to have kids lest they increase their carbon footprint. We, of course, we see something different, my friends. We defend our borders because we know that it's the most vulnerable among us who suffer when our streets are given over to chaos and violence. Some of them call themselves feminists, pretending they care about women. Yet it is their policies that have seen an explosion of migrant crime and sexual assault against the very...
So, yeah, we've got to protect the virtue of our white women against the invading brown hordes. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as the plot of, like, Birth of a Nation.
Right.
It never fucking stops. Magyar was able to win in this environment. There's a lot of fucking rat fuckery. And I want to quote here from this article in a publication called The Insider, which is a Russian expat investigatory journalism outfit. And the headlines, Matryoshka enters the fray. Kremlin and the GRU are spreading disinformation in Hungary ahead of its pivotal parliamentary election. Matryoshka refers to a nested model of Russian deception. So it's a Russian nesting doll, but it's a nickname they use for like hybrid tactics for disinformation. Fun language Russia's got. You know, like Eskimos have 1,000 words for snow. Russian has a thousand words for government lying.
For espionage, tradecraft, and stuff. Yeah. I do hit at it.
So, I'll be quoting here. In the run-up to Hungary's parliamentary elections, Moscow has pulled out all the stops, mobilizing its propaganda and disinformation apparatus in support of incumbent Prime Minister Viktor Orban. The Kremlin strategists intended not only to help Orban gain support, but also stoke discord between Hungary and Ukraine. The normal stuff you expect, which is networks of bots publishing fake news looking for virality, but this part made me laugh. Another area of focus for the team is memes. The team devises ways to package desired narratives using already well-known and popular memes, then distributes them on social media, hoping they will go viral or be reposted by a popular account with a large audience. Particularly successful cases, for example, if a meme was reposted by Elon Musk or reported at meetings in the presidential administration. Yeah. So, Elon retweets a meme.
Right. Great success.
And Vladimir Putin has to hear about it at a fucking cabinet meeting. Like, commented Putin, we report much success. Elon Musk has retweeted the pig poop balls gif with the balls labeled as the West, the poop is Islam, and the pig is George Soros.
It's ridiculous and everything, but like, I'm not that. None of that surprises me at all. Shit, like, fucking works, you know? People love memes, dude. Everybody. Racist, too. They love their memes. Their memes usually don't hit, in my opinion, but they sure do eat them up, though.
We were talking about why they didn't try to use stay in power by force, Orban, but like you do, the smart way to do is do the election fuckery on the front end, right? You rig the systems, you rig the media, which he had done. A lot of his allies owned the media; it didn't work. You rig the universities, you fire all the professors who were woke and gay, right? Get rid of them. They even tried to, like, let me quote here. In March, news broke of a scandal involving claims that Fidesz attempted to buy votes from Hungary's Roma minority. They even tried to scheme with the gypsies, Trey.
Mm.
Even a gypsy curse didn't work.
That's when you know you're desperate. Yeah, over there. Even the gypsies can't save you.
So I want to play this clip here because, like, talking about doing stuff on the front end, they did a false flag attempt that didn't... They attempted a false flag attempt they didn't even follow through on, if you got this clip, Matt.
This blockade prevents anyone from approaching. This after two backpacks with explosives were found near an important energy pipeline in Serbia, which carries Russian gas to the region. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban implied that Ukraine could have played a role in the incident, although others have raised doubts as to its authenticity.
For years, Ukraine has been working to cut Europe off from Russian energy. The Russian sector of Turk Stream is also under continuous military attack.
All right.
Ukraine's
So they tried to frame Ukraine for planting explosives under an oil pipeline that didn't go off, and if they had went off, wouldn't have been enough to damage it.
Right.
And are surprised that this didn't sway anyone. Mm-hmm. So, like... So anyway, this kind of campaign, which is all scandal, all disinformation, all blackmail and psychological operations, heading uphill against an electoral system that's rigged against you, is what is awaiting us if we're not already there, right? So I want to talk about Peter Magyar for a second here, because his origin story for politics is a scandal, where he was framed as the good guy in it. Like I mentioned before, he was in the same party as Orban until like 2023, 2024. He wasn't a politician. He worked in like the foreign policy, I think. He's worked for the government. The original story involves an orphanage near Budapest, where the director of the orphanage was basically trading you know, forcing the kids to give him blowjobs in exchange for whatever you get at an orphanage, more porridge or whatever.
Jesus, bro.
Right. So.
Good Lord. That's that fucking Eastern European misery right there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, priests molested kids in this country too and stuff. Yeah. But you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every society basically has its own flavor of Jeffrey Epstein, I guess is one way to put it. But then in 2023, 2024, there was a case where an underling who worked for the guy who ran the orphanage was prosecuted and convicted for trying to pressure the kids for not reporting his malfeasance, right? This is just a guy who worked there, not accusing me of sexual impropriety himself, but had, like, you know, tried to cover it up. The president at the time, Orban's a prime minister, the president was a woman, I forget her name, doesn't matter. The president signed a pardon. Their system, the justice minister has to sign a pardon too. So this guy, they were in the process of pardoning this guy when the story broke, and it caused a huge outrage because Hungarians, they're just like us, they don't like child sex abuse being funded by their taxpayer dollars. Magyar quit in a huff the government, calling out Orban for corruption. And also released a recording of the justice minister confessing to the scheme to acquire this corrupt pardon on behalf of this guy who worked at the orphanage. Magyar's recording blew up the Fidesz party's reputation around upholding children's safety and family values. Remember, they're the right-wing Christian family values party.
Right.
I saw one Hungarian person rephrase it as like the moral degradation of a moralizing party, right? Here's the plot twist here. The justice minister who confessed to Magyar for conspiring to get this pardon, her name is Judith Varga. That was Magyar's ex-wife. All right? So Magyar wore a wire on his own ex-wife and ruined her career. So Varga, for her part, tried to turn around and accuse Magyar of being an abusive husband, which I don't know the truth about it or not, but she said Magyar locked her in a room without her consent, pushed her against the door while she was pregnant, and walked around their shared residence brandishing a knife. She also said he once faked suicide by basically he laid down on a bed next to an empty bottle of pills and acted like he was dead when she came home. This is what she says. And like then when she tried to call an ambulance to come get him, he's like, no, I'm fine. He went outside and sat in his car in the pajamas while they took the ambulance left. No, I have no idea the truth of this. I think it's probably lying. This is again talking about the blackmail and psyops and bullshit and disinformation, right? And Magyar, for his part, also had to B-Rabbit a sex tape. The sex tape was never released, but I want to let this reporter from Euronews sum it up, talking like Count Dracula.
This happened 1.5 years ago when they visited a party in central Budapest in an apartment, and Peter Magyar said that they engaged in a consensual sex, and he said also that this was a honey trap. He has been lured into this. He also talked about drugs have been used at this party, but he never touched any drugs. Now the big question is whether or not this will impact the Hungarian electoral campaign. Right. Everyone is talking.
So he said that Russia had his ex-girlfriend, lured him to a drug party where he had sex in the code room or whatever, but this is all like, he didn't do anything wrong as far as I can tell. They just filmed him fucking in order to ruin his life. So, yeah.
But like, it didn't.
No.
And he won anyway.
Yeah.
And because it never came out.
Who cares if Peter Magyar has sex in the code room at a party? I don't, do you?
Right.
So, yeah, like I said, Orban's regime isn't just like a Trump ally. Like I said, he's the model for Trump's regime. So if you wonder how hard it might be for a Democrat to win in 2028, we might have to overlook a honey trap scheme involving a cocaine party and sex in the coat room.
I didn't know Eric Swalwell was going to be the president.
He definitely would fall for it. we don't have time to talk about him today, dog. But like, we'll talk about him in the bonus episode because we unfortunately had him on our show. We don't talk about that. So, Orban, like, his closeness with Bibi Netanyahu is fucking weird. I guess it's worth mentioning that George Soros is Hungarian. So, Orban's one of the leaders of pioneering being a huge anti-Semite while loving Israel. And it's worth noting that Bibi Netanyahu's son splits his time between Miami and Budapest. But yeah, Orban was involved in the kind of a kind of Holocaust denial, but basically had the state-run museums remove any mention of Hungarian complicity in the Final Solution while also blaming communism on the Jews. So I want to talk real quick about all the Americans who've lost their paychecks because fucking Orban lost. The Danube Institute is like a think tank in Budapest that's government funded indirectly. The director is a British guy who worked for Boris Johnson. Rod Dreher, who's an American conservative columnist who had moved to Budapest to get away from his wife after she left him to write columns about how it should have been illegal for her to leave him, has already announced he's moving from Budapest to Austria. And don't worry, Barry Weiss already gave him a gig writing for the Free Press. The Danube Institute's funded through a secretive right-wing organization which is named Bethiani Lajos Foundation. I Googled it and couldn't find much except for a resolution commending the foundation passed by the Tennessee State Legislature in 2023.
Of course. It checks out and how nonsensical but also shitty it is. Like, what are they?
I can't even figure out what they're
Tennessee
about.
Tennessee State Legislature have to do with the fucking Bethiani Lajos Foundation.
Yeah.
Fucking... yeah.
I did find...
my public school just closed again or whatever. But anyway.
So I did find a video that the Bethiani Lajos Foundation funded where they promoted Austrian artists. And I know one failed Austrian artist they're probably big fans of.
Yeah, that's what they're devoted to, trying to identify the next Hitler and focusing on the art part.
The
failed art part.
Yeah, so... as I can tell, like, this foundation is basically their version of USAID, except instead of delivering food and medicine to hungry and sick people to win hearts and minds, you deliver cheese and booze to fat conservatives to get them to write op-eds to help you win hearts and minds, and also hand them envelopes of cash, man. The fucking conservative, like, welfare gravy train is amazing, and...
dude, tell me about it.
Yeah.
I know.
Chris Rufo?
I lament it all the time. Again, they always say, it's like, well, I don't know when George Soros is going to call finally, but it's like he's the only one, you know, and he ain't got around to me and us yet, Mark. But he will eventually. But that, like, we get, you get propped up by being a leftist. It's like, no, I do all this propaganda for free. It's even worse, you know.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Russia buys fucking Tim Pool a Bugatti for, talking shit about trans swimmers or whatever. It fucking sucks. And then people you never even heard of, like the Gaddy Smiley or whatever earlier.
Gladden Pippen.
Yeah. Like, got some sweet ass, like, no show, whatever fucking job that probably paid him a crazy amount. I have no idea who the fuck that guy is.
Dude,
never even heard of it.
Chris Rufo, let me read here. Chris Rufo got $35,000 from the Danube Foundation for taking a 3-week vacation to Budapest. And now he has an equivalent made up fake job doing jobs for Florida colleges because of fucking Ron DeSantis. So,
yeah, it's maddening. But, that's the order of the day, as we say often around here. But anyway, hey, fucking dude lost, so that hits. JD got humiliated again, hits even more. So at least there's that. We'll take it. My God. Thanks for watching. We appreciate it. We'll see you. Sorry. Because I didn't do it up top. Go to TreyCrowder.com and check out my upcoming tour dates. Come and see me on the road, please. We got Raleigh coming up and then Phoenix and a bunch of other places. Check out Good Skews, producer Matt's audio exclusive. It's a nice palate cleanser. Good people doing good things. And support this show on Patreon. If you pay $5 a month, you get all the ad-free versions of every episode, as well as two additional full-length bonus episodes per month, which sometimes include Skew and A's, where we answer questions from you, the viewers, the skewers, as it were. Either way, appreciate you watching. We'll see you next time. Love you. Bye.
Skew.